Yat, which, aha, he instructed. Dhyanagochunam, the object of meditation. Sutaha, her son. Vasanavadhanam, with a smiling face. Samasta, on the whole. Vyasta, on the parts. Chintaya, with her mind. A translation, thereafter, having heard with great eagerness and in all detail from her son Kapiladeva, the eternally smiling personality of Godhead, Devahuti, began to meditate constantly upon the Vishnu form of the Supreme Lord. So you can repeat, thereafter, having heard with great eagerness,
thereafter, having heard with great eagerness,
and in all detail from her son Kapiladeva,
the eternally smiling personality of Godhead,
Devahuti began to meditate constantly
upon the Vishnu form of the Supreme Lord.
So there's no purport to this text, nor the next two texts. So we'll just keep reading until we get to the purport. So texts 24 to 25. Bhakti pravaha yogena vairagyena balhiyasa yuktanushtana jatena yanena brahma kituna vishuddhena tadatmanam atmanah vishvato mukham svanubhutyati robhuta Maya Guna Visheshantam. She did so with serious engagement in devotional service. Because she was strong in renunciation, she accepted only the necessities of the body. She became situated in knowledge due to realization of the Absolute Truth. Her heart became purified. She became fully absorbed in meditation upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and all misgivings due to the modes of material nature disappeared. So text 26, and text 26 does have a lengthy purport. Brahmanyavastitamatir bhagavat yatma samshaye nivritta jiva patitvat kshinash kleshapta nirvitaki. Her mind became completely engaged in the Supreme Lord, and she automatically realized the knowledge of the impersonal Brahman. As a Brahman-realized soul, she was freed from the designations of the materialistic concept of life. Thus, all material pangs disappeared, and she attained transcendental bliss. So, purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. The previous verse states that Devahuti was already conversant with the Absolute Truth. It may be questioned why she was meditating. The explanation is that when one theoretically discusses the Absolute Truth, he becomes situated in the impersonal concept of the Absolute Truth. Similarly, when one seriously discusses the subject matter of the form, quality, pastimes, and entourage of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he becomes situated in meditation on him. If one has complete knowledge of the Supreme Lord, then knowledge of the impersonal Brahman is automatically realized. The Absolute Truth is realized by the knower according to three different angles of vision, namely impersonal Brahman, localized supersoul, and ultimately the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If one is situated, therefore, in knowledge of the Supreme Person, this implies that one is already situated in the concept of the Supersoul and impersonal Brahman. In Bhagavad Gita, it is said, Ramabhuta Prasanatma. This means that unless one is freed from the material entanglement and situated in Brahman, there is no question of entering into the understanding of devotional service or engaging in Krishna consciousness.
One who is engaged in devotional service to Krishna is understood to be already realized in the Brahman concept of life, because transcendental knowledge of the Supreme Personality of God includes knowledge of Brahman. This is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita. Brahmano hi pratishthaham. The concept of the Personality of Godhead does not depend upon Brahman. The Vishnu Purana also confirms that one who has taken shelter of the all-auspicious Supreme Lord is already situated in the understanding of Brahman. In other words, one who is a Vaishnava is already a Brahmana. Another significant point in this verse is that one has to observe the prescribed rules and regulations, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, yukta hara viharasya. When one engages in devotional service in Krishna consciousness, he still has to eat, sleep, defend, and mate, because these are necessities of the body, but he performs such activities in a regulated way. He has to eat Krishna prasad. He has to sleep according to regulated principles. The principle is to reduce the duration of sleep and to reduce eating, taking only what is needed to keep the body fit. In short, the goal is spiritual advancement and not sense gratification. Similarly, sex life must be reduced. Sex life is meant only for begetting Krishna-conscious children. Otherwise, there is no necessity for sex life. Nothing is prohibited, but everything is made yukta-regulated with the higher purpose always in mind. By following all these rules and regulations of living, one becomes purified and all misconceptions due to ignorance become nil. It is specifically mentioned here that the causes of material entanglement are completely vanquished. The Sanskrit statement, anartha nivritti, indicates that this body is unwanted. We are spirit soul, and there was never any need of this material body. But because we wanted to enjoy the material body, we therefore have this body through the material energy under the direction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As soon as we are reestablished in our original position of servitorship to the Supreme Lord, we begin to forget the necessities of the body, and at last, we forget the body. Sometimes in a dream, we get a particular type of body with which to work in the dream. I may dream that I'm flying in the sky, or that I may have gone into the forest or some unknown place. But as soon as I am awake, I forget all these bodies. Similarly, when one is Krishna conscious, fully devoted, he forgets all his changes of body. We are always changing bodies, beginning at birth from the womb of our mother. But when we are awakened to Krishna consciousness, we forget all these bodies. The bodily necessities are secondary, for the primary necessity is the engagement of the soul in real spiritual life. The activities of devotional service and full Krishna consciousness are the cause of our being situated in transcendence. The words Bhagavat Yatma Samshaye denote the Supreme Personality of Godhead as the Supreme Soul or the soul of everyone. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Bijam Mam Sarvabhutanam. I am the seed of all entities. By taking shelter of the Supreme Being, by the process of devotional service, one becomes fully situated in the concept of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as described by Kapila Dev, Madguna Shruti Matrena. One who is fully Krishna conscious, situated in the Personality of Godhead, is immediately saturated with love of God as soon as he hears about the transcendental qualities of the Lord. Devahuti was fully instructed by her son Kapiladeva on how to concentrate her mind on the Vishnu form in full detail. Following the instructions of her son in the matter of devotional service, she contemplated the form of the Lord within herself with great devotional love. That is the perfection of Brahman realization or the mystic yoga system or devotional service. At the ultimate issue, when one is fully absorbed in thought of the Supreme Lord and meditates on him constantly, that is the highest perfection. Bhagavad Gita confirms that one who is always absorbed in such a way is to be considered the topmost yogi. The real purpose of all processes of transcendental realization, jnana yoga, or bhakti yoga, is to arrive at the point of devotional service. If one endeavors simply to achieve knowledge of the absolute truth or the super soul, but has no devotional service, then he labors without gaining the real result. This is compared to beating the husks of wheat after the grains have been already removed. Unless one understands the Supreme Personality of Godhead to be the ultimate goal, it is valueless simply to speculate or perform mystic yoga practice. In the Ashtanga Yoga system, the seventh stage of perfection is jhana. This jhana is the third stage in devotional service. Third stage, devotional service. There are nine stages of devotional service. Now that's, of course, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, which is the same as jhana. The first is hearing, and then comes chanting, and then contemplating, or remembering. By executing devotional service, therefore, one automatically becomes an expert jnani and an expert yogi. In other words, jnana and yoga are different preliminary stages of devotional service. Devahuti was expert in accepting the real substance. She contemplated the form of Vishnu in detail as advised by her smiling son, Kapila Deva. At the same time, she was thinking of Kapila Deva, who was the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and therefore she completely perfected her austerities, penances, and transcendental realization. So, Om Gana Timurandasha Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshur Meritam Yena Tasmai Shigurve Namaha. So this particular purport and these verses remind me of this verse from the Bhagavatam. Vasudevi Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojita Janayati Asu Vairagyam Gyanam Cha Yad Ohitakam. That by a similar concept, that by performing devotional service, Vasudeve Bhagavati. Bhagavati means unto Bhagavan. Bhagavan, of course, is Krishna. So Vasudeve Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojati. Then by doing this, Janayati Asu Vairagyam, one automatically gets, which is what's being described here, is Vairagya. The word Vairagya is composed of two syllables. Ragya means passion, to enjoy the material world, and Vaya means without it, or a negation of it. So anyway, one automatically gets this Vairagya. And of course, the verse continues and says, so one automatically gets Sanam, Jnanam Yat Cha Yad Ahaituki. One gets causeless knowledge and renunciation from the material world. So it's the knowledge of Krishna, not of the material world, precisely, except of the purpose of the material world. So let's discuss a little bit about Vairagya, since Prabhupada does mention it here in this purport. You know, Prabhupada talks about reducing the bodily necessities. And then sometimes we read about this and it becomes frightening to hear about these bodily necessities being reduced, because, I mean, that's how we're getting our happiness, isn't it? By eating, you know, we're looking forward, just like, you know, breakfast will be in a little while, so we're looking forward to enjoying ourselves in breakfast, and then lunch, we're looking forward to enjoying ourselves in lunch and probably in dinner. And then when the day is over, we're looking forward to enjoying ourselves by pulling the cover over our head and entering into our warm bed. So, of course, traditionally, it's interesting, this sannyasis would definitely not have warm beds. There's a story about Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He would actually sleep on the floor. Maybe there was a little mat or something like that. And even when his devotees, they wanted to make him a nice bed, you know, some nice cushion to sleep on like that. Jagannanda, he tore apart some banana leaves or something like that and put it into a cushion. He just refused it. And even when his devotees wanted to give him some sandalwood or oil to put on himself, like Jagannanda Pandit wanted to do that, he just refused that. And of course, Jagannanda Pandit, being incarnation of Zachabama, actually got angry and smashed the sandalwood oil and did all sorts of things out of anger. But anyway, he wanted to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But Lord Chaitanya kept refusing these things. And that's very interesting. He kept refusing all these material amenities. So you may say, you know, criticizing me, you know, what are you accepting these things? If Lord Chaitanya slept on the floor, basically, why are you sleeping on a futon or a cushion or with nice stuff like that? And if you look at Lord Chaitanya's place in the Gambira, the Gambira, of course, is the place at Jagannath Puri where Lord Chaitanya lived. It's a tiny little room, you know, maybe, you know, 8 feet by 5 feet or something like that. It's not that Lord Chaitanya, you know, look, you know, you compare it to what facility I have is like, you know, probably 1,300 square feet, you know, with kitchen and office and all that other, like, so you think, huh? What's wrong? And why don't our sannyasis in the movement, and not only me, it's just a lot of sannyasis are like me, or much better than me, of course, but a lot of sannyasis, they have a lot of facility like that. You know, some have cars, some have computers, some. So you're saying, you know, what is this? You know, Vairagya. You know, Lord Chaitanya came to teach. Vairagya Vidya Nija Bhakti Yoga Shiksharta Ekak Purusha Purana Sri Krishna Chaitanya Sharira Dari Kripam Buhiriya Swamaham Prabhadya. This is a poem of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya made to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He said, you've come to teach renunciation. So then what the hell are sannyasis doing? You know, they're using things in Krishna's service. Hopefully they're using things. But that's a danger. It is a danger. It is actually a danger, like we were discussing last night, and also in our talks about the Madhurya Kadambini, one of the causes of anarthas is the byproducts of bhakti, not only the profit, adoration, distinction, but material amenities that one may get as a result of performing their devotional service. I mean, just like, it's funny in ISKCON, what we call sannyasis. We call sannyasis Maharaj. Maharaj is actually, it means great king, big king. It's quite interesting. I don't think Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was ever called Maharaj. Maybe Chaitanya Swami or something like that. But it's very interesting. It's very interesting. So all these designations we have in the movement for sannyasis and the amenities and the donations the sannyasis get, you know, and the grasses come to the sannyasis begging for money, puts one in a dangerous position. So one actually really has to be cultivating this vairagya, even if one is engaging a lot of Krishna's energy in Krishna's service, still that's the trick one has to cultivate, vairagya. Because it's very important. So Prabhupada comments here that we should actually reduce these things. Now, that reduction has to be done in accordance with one's realization. It cannot be done artificially. Because Bhaktivinoda Thakur states very nicely in Chaitanya Shikshamrita, which we studied last December, that one does have material necessities. And Prabhupada is very explicit here. You do have material necessities. So one has to understand how much one needs, and also not to criticize others who have more necessities of a particular type than you do. We see this because everybody has a different amount of material necessities. I mean, some sannyasis, they can sleep on the floor. Other sannyasis need four-poster beds. Not exactly. But they may need a little bit more facility than that for their physical health. That's all. I mean, it's just practical. We should deal with our own renunciation. But every day we should be examining, you know, how much do I need? Am I taking more than I actually need for my keeping the body and soul together for my devotional service? Or, even on the other hand, we shouldn't be taking less than we need. Because if we take less than we need, it can cause craziness or ill health. So it's a balance. Yuktahara viharasya, which is what the verse that Prabhupada quotes here, that one must be moderate. One must give up these things, but actually be moderate and regulated in his sense gratification. In other words, whatever I need has to be given or taken in a regulated fashion. Not that one day I pig out and the next day, you know, I'm a renunciate. We see that sometimes, bhoga tyaga. One day someone may be eating a lot, and the next day, you know, after the stomach ache happens, they may just like decide to renounce. So everything has to be done regulated day after day after day, just like you see, I try to set that example of waking up the same time every day, going to sleep the same time every day, eating at the same time every day. Even if it happens to be a feast, I try to do this, because I haven't eaten a feast in years. So this keeps, not only is it good for spiritual life, why is it good for spiritual life? Why is the material thing good? Because it helps one be peaceful. And being peaceful is a important aspect of cultivating the mode of goodness. Whereas if one is unregulated, like going to sleep, you know, staying up late one night and then waking up late the next morning, or one day and the next day going to sleep early and waking up early, it's actually very bad for the mind as well as the body. You know, just like I was in India recently for the GBC meetings. And the GBC meetings, you know, everybody thinks, you know, it's fun games. But it's many, many hours a day. So I have a determination that I'm not going to meet or go to any meeting after 6 o'clock at night. So the devotees come to me naturally. They say, all right, we've scheduled a meeting to deal with this particular issue at 7 o'clock tonight. And I say, I'm not coming. They said, what do you mean you're not coming? I said, I'm not coming. And then, you know, just, uh-huh. They can hardly believe it. And I said to them, I work between 8 and 6. Those are my hours. After that, I clock out. You know, just like one has a, you understand, a punch a clock, you know, when you punch it in the morning. I clock out, and I go, huh? It's hard to understand. And, you know, one devotee was talking to me about his health. Actually, I'll explain. It was Devamrita Maharaj. He was talking to me about his health. And, you know, he has super high blood pressure, like many of the GBCs are getting at this particular juncture. And I said, this is what you got to do, too. He said, I know, but it's hard. You know, because there's a social pressure. You got to conform. You got to go to the meeting. I said, no. I said, if you want me in the meeting, it'll be between 8 and 6. Otherwise, I'm not coming. And after that, after a day or two, they figured out how to get their meetings in that time between 8 and 6. Right. And they felt better, as well as, you know, I didn't feel guilty about not going to the meetings at night. So it helped all of us. So that's really the point. That it's good for the health, it's good for the mind, it's good for the emotions, it's good for spiritual life to be regulated like that. And you're not in so much anxiety. Like Prabhupada said, if you get your rounds done early in the morning, you know, by about 8 or 9, or at least most of the rounds done by that time, then there's very little anxiety. Otherwise, the rest of the day, you know, you're just looking at your bead bag, and you're just looking at the, you know, all the beads up there on the top there. So I don't have any beads on the top. Mm-hmm. There's one left. And, you know, I'd even like to have more left, because that gives me an excuse to walk more and take exercise, which I need to do. So what's the anxiety? You know, I got my rounds done. Of course, Prabhupada was joking one time when he was chanting his rounds, moving the beads down, and he said, finish the rounds. He said, oh, now I finished my rounds, I can do any damn thing. So that's not what we should be thinking. You know, oh, now I can just surf the internet all day long. You know, I got my rounds done. Heady bow. No, but there's less anxiety. I mean, is this talking about physical health, mental health, psychological health, and, you know, spiritual health? It's so important. It's so important. And everybody knows I established that standard for myself that, you know, at night, unless it's some really important program, someone's going to give $10 million or more, then we're not going to do it. You know, and then, anyway, I mean, it's quite interesting, even if going to the GBC meeting and examining my health is, you know, juxtaposed with everyone else's health. I'm in much better health than most of the other GBC members. And like this year, we hardly had a quorum this year. That was real. We almost didn't have a meeting. Yeah, quorum means, for those of you who don't know what a quorum means, it's like a minyan in the Jewish faith. That means enough people to have a meeting. I mean, it's 51%. So if you have We have about 38 GBC members or something like that, 36 or 38 GBC members. And at least 15 of them did not show up for the GBC meeting this year. And it was generally a health excuse. Either health, there was one person who had the excuse he was teaching a university course. That's all right. That is understandable. Or he also had the excuse he couldn't get in an airplane and fly to India. But anyway, so, and then it caused him health problems, even in first class. But anyway, so, you know, we had someone like in South India who was just like sick, you know, just lying there sick, having his body plunged out. So, and then we had other people with like severe high blood pressure, and of course Jayapataka Maharaj with his particular situation. And I mean, everyone had, we basically almost couldn't have a meeting. I had to go there just to put my warm body there so that they could count my body. Anyway, I couldn't leave any of the meetings or else we wouldn't have had a quorum. So but that's all because of, basically it's because of the, for most people, it's because of the irregulation in the diet and irregulation in the time, et cetera, like this. So if we're regulated, we can be healthy, perform more service. It's like the that story that the tortoise and the hare. That the tortoise, he went very slow, he was regulated, and the hare, and that's not the hare on top of your head, hare means rabbit in this particular case, he was completely unregulated. So he jumped ahead a few steps, took a little nap, you know, enthusiastic, and then took a little nap. So anyway, so this is extremely important. Prabhupada said, nothing is prohibited, but everything is made yukta. Of course, the word yukta, Prabhupada here translates as regulated, but literally means connected. Connected. But Prabhupada, there's a loose translation, means regulated, which means, you know, basically scheduled. And you see in the case of people like Srila Prabhupada, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, they were extremely regulated in their daily schedule. Very, very important. Very, very important. Anyway, that's my advertisement for today. So if one does that, regulates it, then the mind's peaceful, one is not agitated by material desires as much, especially, you know, where do material desires come? Of course, ultimately from the heart. But there's physical adjustments that can be made to minimize the impulses that we have, like physical adjustments as far as the eating, physical adjustments as far as the sleeping, and other things that will minimize, you know, the basic impulses you'll have for material desires that make it easier to control them. Like, I was in India, and it said, you know, it's funny, they say if they see a sadhu with cashews, they know he's not following the regulated principles. Cashews. Because cashews are so high in protein. You understand? So in other words, if you eat luxuriously, then the senses will actually have more chance of just going out of control. So this is important. You know, regulation, minimization, keeping one's mind peaceful, being in the mode of goodness. The mode of goodness is extremely, extremely important for cultivating Krishna consciousness. It's not the goal of Krishna consciousness, but it is a stepping stone that helps us progress in Krishna consciousness. So anyway, so these are some of the points here. And then, when the mind is peaceful, then you can actually concentrate on Krishna. If the mind's not peaceful, how can you concentrate on Krishna? Isn't it? If you're agitated and anxiety, if you have stomach pains because you ate too much, or you're lusty because you're, you know, every person you look at, you know, you want to run after, or every piece of food you want to put in your mouth. I mean, what is it? How can you think of Krishna? It must be peaceful. You must be unagitated mind. That's the description given by Krishna in the Gita. One must have an unagitated mind, sit straight, and of course, Krishna also says, half close your eyes, and then it's easy to meditate on the Supreme Personality of God, because that's what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to be meditating, not meditating in the sense of just sitting down and doing nothing, but concentrating, remembering the pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Like when we're chanting japa, I mean, how many times are we meditating when we're chanting japa? Or how many times is our mind wandering and anxiety about, you know, every other thing in the world? Isn't it? You're sitting down chanting japa and you're just, mind is wandering. You're not meditating. You're meant to meditate while you chant japa. Not just like plug away, get them done, and just, you know, just like think of every damn other thing. But you're meant to meditate. So that requires being peaceful. So we make adjustment in terms of our, that's the real point of renunciation, in terms of eating and sleeping, mating and defending, whatever we need to do to keep our mind peaceful. Not, of course, not whatever, I have to be careful what I say, because someone may say smoking marijuana keeps their mind peaceful. But whatever, what do we have to do within the purview of the regulated principles to keep our mind peaceful so we can meditate on Krishna's pastimes and Krishna's activity, Krishna's form, Krishna's nature, qualities, while we're chanting his holy names. So, any questions or comments about these things? Yeah.
Sometimes we're put in situations where we can't keep that regulation.
So, yeah.
You know, is there any other way to help, like, compensate?
Well, sometimes, it should be a sometimes. I mean, if it's all the time, I mean...
Well, for me, it's the whole semester.
The whole semester. I mean, it's at night, you're going to night school and everything like that. So for some time it may happen like that. Because then what happens if you're going, you're up late at night, and then, I mean, you can certainly push yourself to wake up early the next morning, but then the whole next day is you're completely exhausted. And it's like torture to walk around in a trance. That's what I've experienced too. You know, sometimes people say that I should stay awake all night on a Kadashi. But, you know, practically speaking, you know, for some people, they may have, like, spiritual bodies where they can do this. But for me, it would make me less Krishna conscious. So, yeah, you have to be practical. I mean, obviously, if you're up all night, then you may have to wake, not up all night, of course, but then you may have to wake up a little later in the morning, like that. And then, you know, I'm not saying that waking up at 4 is obligatory for everyone who's out there in the world, because I understand there's certain things happening. You know, but for those of us who are in the temple, we have a little bit more control over our lives. At least I have more control over my life. You know, I can turn off the phone at 8 o'clock at night. If I didn't turn it off, people would be calling me all night long. So I have more control. But for those who actually have responsibilities on the outside, then they make some adjustment. But I think regulation may still be possible in terms of just waking up a little later in the morning. You know, don't force yourself. I mean, this may become as, people may think this is heretical. I mean, don't force yourself to wake up early if you're not getting sufficient rest at night. You know, the health is very important. Prabhupada understood these things. Krishna understands these things. But for those of us who have some control over it, you know, I certainly can have a modicum of control over my life, then I'm able to go to sleep early enough so I can wake up for Mangala Arati. But for those of us who have other responsibilities outside, I understand that completely. And Krishna understands that completely. But it's important to get sufficient rest. If you don't get sufficient rest, you get sick, the immune system gets depleted, then the mind is not able to focus. Like I mentioned before, if I were to stay awake all night on a Kadasi, my mind would definitely not focus. The next day, it'd be like walking around like a zombie. Not being able to read, not being able to chant properly with focus. So what would be the use of staying awake all night? What's the use of an austerity where it takes you away from Krishna, right? What's the use of such an austerity? One should accept everything favorable, reject everything unfavorable. So unfavorable means those things which actually keep you from focusing on Krishna. Krishna, of course, also means his service, his name, his pastimes, you know, because the whole point is to actually be absorbed in Krishna. What does that say? What is that verse? Not pariyad yadid vratim shrama evi kevalam. Dharma swanasita pumsam vishvakshena kata suya That if, even if one does everything nicely, but at the end they're not achieving a rati or a taste for Krishna's names or being absorbed in Krishna's names, then they're basically, what are they doing? They're spinning their wheels, basically. So you have to see. You judge your life in that way. First thing is, you have to be Krishna conscious. If you're not Krishna conscious, you'll never be able to give Krishna consciousness to anyone else. So, I mean, of course, one shouldn't be, I'm not saying that one should be fanatic, too fanatic about these things. You know, there's certain times when there are extenuating circumstances where you may have to break the regulation. I mean, that's understandable. You know, certain things, maybe in an amazing preaching program where you're giving $10 million. I mean, I would break my regulation in without even thinking about it for half of that amount of money. But anyway, so, you know, in certain circumstances, yes. But on a normal basis, we should have some regulation. We may have to wake up at 5 or 6 in the morning if we're forced to be up late at night because of, like, schooling or something like that. But, you know, whatever it is that I find, to get the rounds done early is an important thing. That get the rounds done early so we don't have so much anxiety the rest of the day. We're not walking around trying to finish our rounds. And, you know, it may take 4 hours to chant the rounds when you're chanting later in the day, whereas to chant it early in the day, it only takes me an hour and a half, but for most people it takes 2 hours. So let's be practical. I mean, I enjoy, when I can, getting up even earlier. I mean, if it was up to me, I would get up at 2 o'clock in the morning if I could get by with less sleep. I would be in ecstasy to get up at 2 o'clock in the morning, because then I'd have my rounds done, I could do reading early in the morning, but, you know, unfortunately my body requires a little more rest, that's all. We have to be practical. And different, as we mentioned, different people require different amounts of sleep or eating or whatever. Like we see people from India, they can sleep very, very little. They can get by with 3 hours of rest a night, whereas Westerners, 7 or 8 hours is usually usually what's required. So everybody has to search out their own level of renunciation that's practical, so they can continue meeting their material necessities and at the same time being steady. Okay. Just have to be